Good morning. This is the Real Estate for Breakfast podcast. I am your host, Philip Coover, partner in Ice Miller's Real Estate Practice Group. Today, we have Magnolia Land Partners on the show. We have the co-founder, Mark Bernstein. Mark, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we're recording this on April 20th, one day before Earth Day. We're calling this our Earth Day special, even though the listeners will get this probably sometime in May. Because Magnolia is doing a lot of really interesting things. Often I have guests on the show that are brokers or owners or people that I'm talking to or working with on various things. This one is just truly something I picked out as I wanted to talk to Magnolia because I think what they're doing is really interesting and unique. And so this one's for me, but I think everybody will be interested in it as well. So Mark, why don't you tell us a little bit about the company that you co-founded and what Magnolia is working on right now?
Sure thing. So Magnolia is a mitigation company. We develop and participate in different environmental markets around the country. So when it comes to environmental markets, a lot of people are familiar with carbon offsets. What we do essentially is develop offsets for other types of for other environmental issues. So a lot of our work right now is focused on habitats, so wetlands and streams and endangered species habitats. We're also doing work related to using environmental markets to address issues like urban flooding and water quality issues as well. So with Magnolia, we are developing new environmental markets and spreading environmental markets to new parts of the country as well.
Yeah, no, thank you for that summary. And I think a lot of people think about, when they think about conservation and environmental companies, they think about not-for-profits. Donations come in, they go out and do good work for the environment. You all have a different business model, which I think is important because you work with different stakeholders, whether it be developers that need to acquire credits because they're disturbing, they've run, I don't want to say a foul, but they've done something which triggered some sort of response from the regulatory authorities, whether it be the Clean Water Act or other such laws, where they need you all or companies like you to help work with them. And you also help landowners that have potential habitats on their site. So why don't you tell everyone about the different parties that you come in contact with and how the operation works?
Yeah, certainly. So in the U.S., there are a lot of landmark laws like the Clean Water Act, the Endangered Species Act, the Clean Air Act that have no net loss provisions. And what that means is that the government's not going to allow you to develop something that's going to result in a net loss of a certain resource. So the one that some folks are familiar with is wetlands. If you are a landowner, you've got a property, you're trying to build a building, if you're going to lose an acre of wetlands, the Army Corps of Engineers, which is the agency that is tasked with administering the Clean Water Act, they're not going to allow you to build on that acre of wetlands unless you're offsetting that to comply with that no net loss provision. So Phil, one thing that I would say is you'd mentioned that a lot of our clients are groups that have run afoul of these regulations. What we're actually trying to do is create an opportunity for people to be proactive in meeting this compliance. So not wait until you've run afoul of these laws, but instead early on in the project development period, say identify, here's a sensitive habitat that we're gonna be affecting, and how can we proactively make sure that the net result of our project is a benefit for that resource. So for those folks, previously before Magnolia, they'd have to go out and for the wetland example, restore wetlands themselves. So when Walmart was in extreme expansion mode in the 90s, they actually became the largest restorer of wetlands in the country, which is kind of wild because they were impacting a lot of wetlands when they were building these stores. Interesting that they were doing that, not their core competency. And it turns out when they went and looked at these sites that were restored, more often than not, the end result wasn't too positive. These weren't high functioning wetlands. What's been developed is, and this is where the other side of the market comes in. So Magnolia now works with landowners who have suitable habitat where we can go in and restore wetlands, for example. And we receive a bank of credits for doing that work. So a real simple way of thinking about it is that for every acre of wetlands that we restore, we receive one wetland restoration credit. And then we can then trade those credits with the Walmarts or the other groups of the world that are looking to comply with their environmental regulations without having to get into the ecological restoration business themselves. So it helps them to proactively comply with different environmental regulations. And then the really neat part is on the other side of the market for landowners that host these mitigation projects, it's an opportunity for them to earn income by doing things that are beneficial for the environment. So instead of growing crops, they can grow wetlands on their property, and they're not just doing right by the planet, but it's also can be a savvy business move as well.
Well, tell us about the savvy business move. So, because you know, I think it's important for people to understand that you know, there are good economic reasons as well as environmentally conscious reasons to participate in these programs.
Sure. One challenge in talking about this is we try and talk in generalities about environmental markets and participating in these programs, but the programs are so wildly different. So going back to what we were discussing as far as wetlands, and we'll use that as an example. So Magnolia operates the Illinois Conservation Exchange. It's a statewide agricultural mitigation banking program. It's a program where basically farmers are paying farmers to farmers that need to drain wetlands can pay farmers elsewhere in the state to restore wetlands on their properties. What we do is we recruit landowners that are interested in earning income through conservation. They can go in and take cropland that maybe floods pretty frequently. So it's marginal cropland, and take that out of production and instead restore wetlands. Magnolia pays them for every acre of wetlands that we're able to restore. Magnolia covers 100% of the cost associated with restoration and maintaining the wetlands. And the only requirement of these landowners is to, when we plant trees on their property, is to not cut down the trees. So complying with the terms of the conservation easement that we place on their land. What we're doing is we're creating really high quality habitat on their properties. So they're growing wetlands, and also they're now having great habitat has a lot of recreational value as well. So there's some ancillary income that they can earn in addition to participating in these environmental markets in the form of hunting leases, things like that as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I was good. You just answered the question, but in case people didn't pick up on it. So, you know, my question was going to be, do you buy the land and acquire title to the land, or do you pay for a conservation easement and for the right to take care of it? And it sounds like the latter.
Yeah. So our preference is for Magnolia to be a platform for landowners to get connected to environmental markets. So we're looking, our preferred approach are landowners, that are looking to unlock that economic value of their property, but are looking to retain ownership of their land. So when you enroll, importantly, when you enroll in a program with us, Magnolia still needs to ask permission to enter onto your property. It's still your land to use as you see fit, provided that you comply with the terms of the conservation easement. And generally that boils down to, if we're planting something on your property, make sure that you're not cutting it down. There are certain instances where Magnolia will acquire properties in fee simple opportunistically when it makes sense. And generally what we'll do is when we acquire a property, we'll conserve it and then either donate it or we'll put it back on the market as high quality recreational land for people who are looking for that type of habitat.
Yeah, no, so it makes a ton of sense. If you're a landowner, it's got, you know, maybe you've had the family for generations, or you just have all this land and you have land that, you know, someone may consider initially not usable land in the traditional sense of growing crops or construction, but you're like, oh, what am I going to do with these wetlands? I can't touch them because the Clean Water Act, I'm not generating income off of them. Well, you can, if you work with Magnolia, you can generate some income off of it and turn it into, you know, an amenity or something of value from a recreational sense, as you point out. And it kind of similarly, you know, on the other side of the equation, you have developers who are looking at property. They're like, okay, I got 40 acres here, 10 acres, but 20% of it is wetlands. I can't touch it. Or if I do, I have to, you know, acquire credits and have a no net loss situation. Or I could work with Magnolia. I could turn that into an amenity for this residential development so that they have some nature right there to use, and realize a little bit more value out of it while improving the overall project and the property.
Yep. And that's something that we do frequently is folks will reach out with property that they own or a property that they're thinking about acquiring and wondering, is there an opportunity to use this? There's this extra land that comes along with it. Would this work for any of your programs? And we can say, yeah, this potentially qualify for endangered species habitat, and you're taking something that was a liability and turning into a potential asset. And it's an easy thing for us to do, is to quickly give a once over of a property and see whether it might qualify for any of our programs.
I also like the other component that you just mentioned that you're talking about in the Walmart context is often companies try to do everything themselves. Oh, we'll just get an in-house environmental team. And, you know, when we're developing these Walmarts, we'll do it ourselves. But here it's like, you can focus on what you're good at. And then at the same time, solve this problem using an outsourced solution, which you guys do all of the time. So it makes more sense kind of for everyone to be focused on what they're good at doing.
Yeah. And one important aspect of that, in addition to just allowing groups to focus on their core competencies, by participating in one of these markets, we've gone to great lengths to ensure that there's a complete transfer of liability. So if you're going out and doing this work yourself, you're not just responsible for doing the restoration, you're also responsible for making sure that the trees survive and for X number of years, and there's maintenance and reporting and replanting and all that goes into it. When you purchase credits from us, there's a complete transfer of that responsibility. So you're really able to cut a check and walk away if you so choose. Some groups like to continue to be involved. They find it to work interesting and they come out and tour the sites and see where the money's going. But it becomes something that's voluntary at that point, as opposed to a mandate.
And how do you all plan for that, kind of the long-term care?
Yeah, there's two phases of all of our projects. There's the active phase while we're selling credits. And during that period, Magnolia is on the hook to make sure that we meet all of our performance standards. If restoration is not taking hold as anticipated, then we need to go in and adaptively manage to make sure that we meet our success criteria. Once we're able to meet all of our success criteria and all the credits, and we're done selling credits from our property, then what we do is we transfer into the long-term stewardship phase. And when that happens, we establish an endowment for each one of our projects. And these endowments are intended to be non-wasting. And the proceeds from the endowment pay for any ongoing management and monitoring of the sites. So it's beneficial for the site in that there's a guaranteed stream of funding to ensure that the sites are being well taken care of, but also from as a for-profit company, it allows us to not have that continuing liability in perpetuity.
Yeah, right. No, that's I was looking for an answer on, but you've got a good one. So let's talk about your projects. So on your website, it's I would encourage everyone to go to mitigation.org to check it out. You've had over 10,000 acres protected, over 5,000 acres of endangered species habitat conserved, 25,000 linear feet of stream restored, and 14 states with active projects. You all are busy.
Yeah, we're staying busy and we're continuing. We're growing both in terms of the footprint, but also we're trying to go deep in each of the states where we operate. So expanding into states where there currently aren't environmental markets, and also trying to build out the the different resources that we're developing markets for. So for example, in Illinois, we started with just wetlands and for agricultural work, and now we've expanded to different types of aquatic resources, and now we're working with endangered species as well. So we're providing more of a suite of products to clients who are looking to purchase credits, but also it increases the likelihood that when a landowner reaches out looking to enroll their property in a conservation program, that there's hopefully a good fit for them on their land.
Yeah, and so you've done a lot of projects in Southern Illinois. You know, I'm right outside Chicago here, office in Chicago, and I'm going out to the Conservation Foundation in DuPage, their annual gala tonight. And, you know, so tell us, so they're active in Northern Illinois, different type of organization. But just tell us about what, you know, how you're trying to expand in Illinois. I'm from DeKalb, you know, so tell me, can I reach out to some people in DeKalb? How can we help?
Yeah, I appreciate the offer there. The best part of my job is being able to go to different conservation organizations, all of which are doing amazing work, and almost across the board are cash strapped, and being able to say, we're looking to invest in projects. What's on your wish list? Are there sites you're looking to acquire? Are there sites you're looking to restore? And being able to help out with that. So you mentioned earlier that we operate in a bunch of different states. And we're not able to be experts in every geography where we operate, and for every resource that we're touching. And what we really do is lean on these local conservation organizations to help say, here are the sites that are going to be most impactful. Here are the projects that are going to be most impactful. And what we're able to do is put these mitigation dollars, these dollars from environmental markets behind the work that these local conservation organizations are doing right now. So just this morning, we were meeting with a forest preserve has acquired some sites and is looking for opportunities and funding to do really important prairie restoration work. And it seems like hopefully we'll be able to help them out by taking some of these mitigation dollars and putting it towards those projects. So would encourage if folks are interested in getting involved and just want to see if a project might be a good fit for us. Yeah, certainly do reach out. It's mitigation.org. A lot of people think it's litigation with an L. It's mitigation with an M.
Very different. Very different.
Very different.
I was good. Well, can you give us just an example of maybe one of your favorite projects that you've done?
Yeah, sure. An early project that we did was, this is actually just outside of Philadelphia. And we were working, we went in and met with local land trusts and also the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and said, we're trying to build out an endangered species market in for the state, and just didn't currently exist. Do you have a site that you would like for us to target? And they were able to find, I believe, probably the only site in the world that has it's a mix of four different endangered species that all happen to live on this 100-acre parcel. So you've got the bog turtle, which is North America's smallest turtle. Highly recommend folks to look them up. They fit in the palm of your hand. And actually that's why they're so endangered, is that they go for a pretty penny on the exotic pet trade. We were able to go out and conserve a site that had a bunch of these bog turtles that had three different, very endangered bats, and work with a landowner who was, ready to get out of the farming game, but wanted to be able to pass on their property for future generations. So by enrolling with us, they were able to unlock, basically a payment almost equal to had they sold the property, but they were able to retain the property. We were able to protect four different endangered species. We also partnered with a local university and a state natural resource agency to do a bunch of research on the property. We put up different types of bat boxes and saw which type of bat box was most valuable or most heavily utilized by these different species. And then we also did some wetland stream restoration on the property, to boot. So it was really an opportunity to take a property and realize all the different ecological services that that the property could provide by enrolling and participating in these different environmental markets, and by doing that, creating this really important wildlife refuge and nature preserve just outside of the city. And it's a fun one to get to go track, where we have researchers go out on an annual basis, and while the broader populations for these species are unfortunately not doing very well at all, on this site they're really thriving, and it's become the largest stronghold, especially for some of these bats in the whole state. So, and that's one of the earlier projects that we've done, so we've been able to see the fruits of the labor and it actually work.
Yeah.
So that's one I like to, it's always fun to go visit, and I'm especially proud of.
That's really cool. It's a great success story. My next question is really just, how did you get the idea to be a co-founder of this company and to take the leap from your prior employment to start this company? And while you're thinking about how to answer that, I'm going to flatter you a little bit, because normally I work with a lot of developers, and I always think that being a developer is a very difficult job because it requires a lot of different skill sets. You have to be able to have vision to kind of see the project. You have to understand numbers, and kind of more difficult, maybe you have to understand real estate, but more difficult is like the different types of people you have to work with. You have to work with investors that are strictly concerned about financial returns and how those work. You have to work with politicians. You have to work with local governments to get their approvals. And you have to work with people who are in the community who may have thoughts about your development and what you're trying to do that may not be congruent with your thoughts. And you have to work with lawyers. You have to work with bankers. And so you just have very different types of people and types of that you have to kind of all pull it all together. And so you're doing something similar, but you also have the science component, which is on, layered on top of it, is you have to understand the science of it all and have kind of the training to add that component, because that's the central thrust of what you're trying to do. So, just tell us about how you started the company, and yeah, just love to hear about it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I've been interested in environmental markets for a long time. In college, I studied environmental science and economics, and was really interested in how markets could be used to solve some of the most pressing environmental issues. In college, I was interning at the Chicago Climate Exchange, which at the time was the first and only voluntary cap and trade system that was in existence in the U.S. at that point. Post college, I started working at a company that was participating in wetland mitigation in southern Louisiana, and that's when I really learned about some of these compliance-based environmental markets and really opened my eyes to the potential here. And it's commonplace in southern Louisiana, because wetlands is something that every developer deals with on nearly every project. So they developed this system, and over the years it hammered out something that went from being a real point of friction to a streamlined, efficient way of both complying with these regulations and these requirements, but also putting money towards really critical coastal restoration projects. So the impetus for Magnolia was taking this efficient environmental market that had developed in southern Louisiana and trying to apply it for other natural resources in other parts of the country. Feel really fortunate that we've been able to do that and are starting to develop first of their kind markets in a bunch of different parts of the country. To go back to what you were saying about the different stakeholders that we work with, that is one of the really interesting and one of the big challenges or challenging aspects of the business. So we divide the company up into four parts. We've got a land team that goes out and works with our partner landowners that are interested in participating and hosting conservation projects. We've got the sales side that goes and talks to the folks that are looking to purchase the credits. We've got the operations side, which works with the different contractors that help with our restoration work across the country. And then we have it's operations and science. They're also the ones that are going out and doing all the monitoring, the baseline reports and the species surveys, et cetera. And then lastly is the regulatory component. So because these are compliance-based markets, every project needs to be approved and get the blessing of different government agencies, either federal, state, or local level. So each one of those stakeholders has different needs, and to try and triangulate all those different needs to get a project on the ground that is going to meet their unique requirements is the challenge and the fun part of what we do.
It's really cool that you're doing that. And so what's been kind of the biggest hurdle for you in growing your business? I'm sure you have a desire to do more as you see more that needs to be done around the country. So just tell us like what your challenges are in growth and getting more projects and doing more.
Yeah. A couple right off the top of my head. One is on the regulatory side, there's been a bit of a whiplash with different administrations in terms of the enforcement and guidance around different environmental regulations. So a lack of consistency in how regulations are enforced is definitely a challenge for the growth of environmental markets. And then on a similar note is trying to create a process that's standardized and in order to help with scaling. Right now, every project is when you're dealing with land and you're dealing with all these different interests, every project seems to have its own unique spin on it. And in order to be able to continue scaling up, we're trying to figure out a way to where possible standardize across sites and across geographies. And that's something that I spend a lot of my time thinking about is what aspects of the business can we standardize in order to help with scaling.
That's for sure. We have the same struggle in law. You know, it would be great to have forms and documents and everything that is more consistent, but you know, every deal is different. So it's like trying to figure out how you add the unique characteristics to an already standardized form is something that we work towards and struggle with all the time.
Yeah, I'm sure. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention also that we're trying to grow and continuously looking for additional people that we can bring onto the team. So if anyone's interested by any of this work, would strongly encourage you to reach out because we're looking for additional passionate team members to help us scale.
Yeah, and I also noticed that if people are interested, you have a link on your website for if you're interested in joining the team, mitigation.org, not litigation.
Thanks, well,
Mark. thank you very much for coming on the show. Any last words of encouragement or parting words for you?
Yeah, so I think for folks that care about the environment or follow some of these issues closely, there's so much negative news coming out on a daily basis, and it can be easy to become discouraged. And I tend to gravitate towards opportunities for trying to look for the positives and things that we can do to turn some of these environmental issues and challenges into opportunities. And that's one of the things I'm really excited about with the spread of environmental markets is it's taking something that was a point of friction and turning it into an opportunity for marrying interests about necessary economic development with really important and really vital restoration and conservation. So I would encourage other folks to look for similar opportunities where in addressing really important environmental needs.
Yeah, I know. I think what you're doing is really smart with the environmental markets. I'm always a proponent of utilizing incentives to help people do things that are good for the greater good and the community as a whole. I think it. I personally am a believer in the long-term incentive of helping the environment. But hey, if you can show people the short-term incentive to do things right now. That's a great thing. You see that with affordable housing and with other things where there's incentives and markets that are there to encourage people to invest in different types of communities. I think what you're doing in the environmental space, with environmental markets, is a really great thing for our community, for our economy, and for the environment. So thank you very much for what you're doing for helping educate us all.
Yeah, thank you so much for setting this up, and it was really great to speak with you.
All right, thanks, Mark.
This publication is intended for general information purposes only and does not and is not intended to constitute legal advice. The listener should consult with legal counsel to determine how laws or decisions discussed herein apply to the listener's specific circumstances.